easily, she said, desperate. Don't fucking come back. The slam of the door shook her bones. She broke. As soon as Red stepped out into the corridor, something forced his mind back into his body. For the last 10 minutes, he'd been distant, detached, floating above himself like a ghost, watching himself lose it, feeling the echo of his own pain as if it belonged to someone else. Now he felt it firsthand, as if God had just punched him in the gut. The walls of Chloe's flat had been slowly closing in. A beautiful, heartbroken gaze had suffocated him, but now he was out and free and drained and weak. He leaned back against her door, unable to take another step, and sank slowly to the floor. His world was a haze of bright white melting into blood red, but when he pressed his palms flat against the cold linoleum, the shock of it helped him focus. His mouth was numb, as if it belonged to someone else. His tongue tasted coppery like blood. His skin was sweat-soaked and clammy, and he hadn't even noticed. He was afraid. He realized it all at once, both surprised and resigned. He was afraid, and it made him angry, like a rabid fucking animal gnawing at its own trapped foot. But the thought was jarring, and he found himself frowning, correcting the negativity. I am not an animal. Then he said it aloud, because Dr. Maddox was always harping on about mindfulness and mantras. I am not an animal, he whispered, his voice disappearing like smoke. I am not an animal. What came next? He told himself positive things, and he found something to focus on. That was it. Red chose the first thing his eyes fell on, the door to the flat opposite Chloe's, which had a scuff mark he'd need to paint over. Yeah. He stared at the black mark against the red wood and repeated his words like a prayer. That door better not fucking open, because he was in no shape to talk to tenants right now, or to anyone. He sat with himself for a while. Okay, he finally murmured. Okay, Red. What just happened? Chloe had manipulated him. That was what. She'd manipulated him just like Pippa had, except the thought that had seemed so reasonable 5 minutes ago now felt absolutely ridiculous because Chloe was nothing like Pippa, and he knew that belief was his own because he'd thought it 1,000 times before. This wasn't like his last relationship. No one was messing with his head. The iron band around his chest eased a bit. He cradled his right hand in his left and rubbed his aching scar. His head ached too. Words settled in his mind like barbed wire, ripping into everything they touched. I'll pretend I never fucking met you. Good riddance. He'd said that. It already felt like a dream, or a nightmare. But no, it had been him. The words had felt wrong in his mouth, and they felt wrong in his memory. Then they swirled, twisted, transformed. He heard Chloe as if for the first time. I put you on the list because you're important. When she'd told him that, it had sounded like bullshit, like the kind of nonsensical excuse Pippa had always managed to dredge up. Except Chloe wasn't Pippa, Chloe wasn't Pippa, Chloe wasn't Pippa. And she'd told him it was a misunderstanding, not like, you're too stupid to understand, even if he'd heard it that way at the time. No, she'd been begging him to give her a fucking chance. She'd told him to wait. She might have told him the truth, and he'd left. He'd treated her like shit, and he'd left. He let his head fall back to hit the door. Fuck. 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 Chloe, he called, his voice hoarse, his hands twisting nervously together. There was a pause that lasted a lifetime. Then her voice came through the door, thick with tears. What do you want? His heart broke. It just fucking broke. How could he ever have thought that she would? But he remembered exactly how. Remembered the desperate grip of panic that had choked his logical thoughts and dredged up remembered toxic emotions. Now he just had to explain it to her. Had to fix his monumental fuck-up because whatever he'd overheard, whatever he'd believed, he knew Chloe wasn't using him. He knew. Shit, he said. Then because it made him feel slightly better, he said it again. shit. I'm sorry, Button. I lost it. He heard some faint sniffing, but her voice came back stronger this time, threaded with iron. I noticed. Oh, my God, Chloe, I'm a dick. I'm such a dick. Yes, you fucking are. The fact that she was even talking to him filled him with hope. Golden, glowing. It sloshed uneasily in his stomach, mixing with the bitter aftertaste of his fear. He felt nauseous, ignored it. Can I come in? Can we talk? Her answer was immediate. No. He wasn't surprised. He remembered vividly what she'd said to him, muffled beneath the ringing in his ears. If you can leave this easily, don't fucking come back. He could tell her the truth, that it hadn't been easy at all, that it had been his only option, that he'd wanted to turn around and touch her, but he'd been so fucking afraid, only he didn't think that would fix things. Because as far as Chloe was concerned, he'd just left. The full impact of that fact hit him hard enough to rattle his teeth. He'd left. Chloe, he said, the words shaking with all his desperation, all his regret. He closed his eyes and threaded his hands through his hair. I don't know what happened. No, I do. I fucked up and I'm sorry. I panicked and I couldn't think, but... I know, she said, interrupting him. For a second, his heart gave a tentative little hop. But then she continued. I know, Red. I understand. I really do, but... I don't think we should see each other anymore. Just like that, he truly understood the word devastation. He was the Earth after a monumental asteroid, knocked off his axis, burned and choked and twisted into a wasteland. Chloe, no, please, I'm trying. It's not because of you, she said firmly, which couldn't possibly be right, only... Only she sounded so sure. So calm, so in control, as if the tears he'd heard a moment ago had been imaginary. It's me, she said. I can't do this, because we're only human, and I'll stumble or you will, and it'll hurt just like this, and I can't, I can't. I should have known I wasn't ready for this. When you walked out... She sucked in a breath so hard he actually heard it. That breath painted a picture for him. Chloe, her lovely face streaked with tears he'd caused, her soft mouth rolled into a hard line to stop herself from sobbing. The thought caused him actual, physical pain. His hands ached, not because of his scar, but because they needed to touch her. But she didn't want his touch anymore. When you walked out, she said, composed now, it felt like I was breaking. Red officially knew the feeling. Baby. She kept going, the words marching out like well-trained soldiers. No one should be able to make me feel like that. No one should have that power. It's not safe. A cold hand cradled the back of his skull, long, icy fingers flooding his nervous system until his whole body felt numb. She was shutting down again. Because of him. He couldn't bear it. He refused to be the reason someone so brave went back into hibernation. Chloe. Listen to me. I've got issues coming out my arsehole. That has nothing to do with you. You did nothing wrong. Even if you don't... If you don't want me anymore, that doesn't mean you should give up on everyone, on feeling things for people, on risks.
Silence.
Chloe. Are you there?
Nothing.
Panic filled him like flames devouring a forest, an unstoppable destruction. Chloe, please, I'm sorry, I'm so fucking sorry. You can trust me, you can trust yourself. If you just give me time, I'm working on this, I can be better.
That finally garnered a response. Her voice was so gentle, but every word cut him deep.
You don't need to be better, Red. Not for me, never. I should be better for you, for this. It's been perfect, she said, so softly he almost missed the word. But now it's over. All right?
For the first time, He turned around, abandoning the scuff mark that had anchored him. He faced the door he'd been leaning on, the door that hid Chloe, and said,
"No."
Because it wasn't all right at all. "I'm going. All right."
"No."
And then, finally, his desperate mind settled on a solution. A possibility. A hope.
"I can show you,"
he said.
"I can show you that this is worth it. That you don't need to be afraid, because even when I fuck up, I'll make it better.
Red,
you are perfect for me, Chloe,"
he said, determination stiffening his spine, strengthening his voice. Finally, his real self returned. He stepped into his confidence like a well-worn leather jacket.
"I know you, and I want you, and I need you. We can do this. I'll prove it to you."
"You can't, Red." Her voice shook on his name. "This isn't... relationships aren't supposed to hurt."
"Life hurts," he said fiercely. "It's unavoidable. But I know the difference between torture and growing pains."
She didn't reply.
She'd probably walked away, fed up with him rambling like a fanatic, but that was okay.
He was okay. He'd made his decision, and he'd stick by it. She meant too much for him to let things end like this. Maybe they'd end anyway, no matter what he did, and he'd have to come to terms with that, but not before he'd tried to fix things, not before he'd done everything he could to earn her trust, to prove that he was there to stay, to show her he was working on himself, for her, whatever it took. He stared at her door for a moment longer, pretending she was still on the other side. He told her absence a secret.
"I love you."
Then he left. It was time to prove it. Chapter 22. Chloe wanted to believe that Red's whispered "I love you" had been simple desperation, another last-ditch attempt to change her mind to fix everything that had just shattered between them. But the thing was, if she hadn't been pressed against the door, listening to him as her stung heart held her back, she wouldn't have heard it at all. Had he meant it? Was it real? Maybe it didn't matter either way, because no matter what he felt, no matter what she felt, he'd still ripped her open and shattered her insides just by walking out the door. No one should be able to do that to her. Not like that. Not anymore. So Chloe didn't allow herself to cry when he was gone. Instead, she got to work. Her body stiff and robotic, her physical pain at the very back of her mind, she sat down at her desktop computer, grim-faced, to finish his website. She would tie up every loose end there was between them, and then, she would wait until the end of her lease and move out. She'd be the one to disappear on him. For the first time, she'd be Chloe Badass Brown, who walked away from all the dangerous emotional tangles that threatened her. The thought brought a vicious smile to her face, but it wasn't the kind of smile that made things better. If anything, it made her feel worse. It took hours to finish the site. By the time she was done, her stomach cramped violently with hunger, her knuckles screamed with the agony of overuse, and her rigid, aching back brought tears to her eyes. She was hurting herself, and she knew it, but she didn't have room to regret it. As she fired off her last email to Red, the only thing she could feel was relief. She'd be so much better after this was done, after she brought all these messy feelings, this imperfect, uncontrollable connection, to an end. She kept the email short.
"Red, your website is complete and ready to go live. I've attached all the information and instructions needed. Please remember to change your administrative passwords in order to remove my access. Chloe."
There. She waited for the pain to fade. Instead, it doubled, a thought hitting her hard. What if Red hurts like this too? What if he was lost and struggling, still shaken by his earlier loss of control? What if he needed her and she'd turned away? Chloe shut down her computer with a sharp click of the mouse and cut off each treacherous mental question just as firmly. it didn't matter. It didn't matter. This was for the best, she hoped. She saw the notice the next day on the building's bulletin board. She almost dropped the post she'd come to pick up. Superintendent Redford Morgan was leaving next month. The words were like a fist to the gut. She'd been trying so hard not to remember his words through the door, promises she couldn't bring herself to believe. So much for that. But she was glad, definitely glad, that he'd decided to listen to her and move on. Good for him. Good for her. Good for them both. Chloe was shaky and distracted all the way back to her flat. Her thoughts were so busy, she almost didn't notice the cardboard box waiting on her doorstep. She kicked it, in fact, the toe of her shoe bouncing off it as she went to put her key in the door, and somehow, the moment she saw it, she knew it was from Red. After all, it couldn't be anything she'd ordered, in spite of her mild dependency on internet shopping, because it was sitting right outside her front door, rather than in the post room. It had no address either, just a word scrawled on top in black. She told herself it was some kind of care package from her parents, because they'd been known to do things like this. She could imagine her dad chuckling to himself as he left it by the door. But then she bent to pick it up and read the word scrawled on the box. Button. She felt like a sack of useless bones after yesterday's exertions, so she dragged the box into the hall rather than trying to pick it up. Then once safely inside, she sat on the floor and stared at it and tried not to feel anything at all. It didn't work. There was a hole in her chest the size of a love-struck heart. This must be some sort of goodbye? Good. The quicker he left, the quicker she'd never have to feel this way again. Inside the box, she found a notebook, its cover a beautiful iridescent gold. She opened it to the first page, saw lines and lines of Red's distinctive scrawl, and slammed it shut as if she'd just come across the devil's Bible. She should open it, should read his goodbye, which doubtless included many apologies and would only confirm the very reasonable conclusion she'd drawn, that relationships were just too risky, and they'd both been fools to try. That she needed to be alone because it was safer. After all, if she'd been alone these past weeks, she wouldn't have spent last night sobbing until she lost her voice. Wouldn't have had a reason to. Chloe put a hand to her raw throat and reminded herself that he'd left, and he'd do it again, and it wasn't worth the risk, and she never should have bothered with a man anyway. Not after she'd been so comfortable without one for years. And yet, she still couldn't open the book. She set it aside with the same care one might use to move a poisonous snake. There were more things in the box, hidden by a layer of tissue paper. She ripped it away to find he'd sent her favourite chocolate, green and black sea salt. Not in a fancy hamper like the one she knew they offered online, either. Just slab after slab of the stuff, as if he'd walked into a shop and bought out all their stock like a loon. The bright blue bars tugged at her heart for precisely 0.002 seconds before she steeled herself against them. This was a goodbye present, nothing that should make her wistful or hopeful or regretful. She put the chocolate on her coffee table so it was within reach while she worked. No use wasting it. The next day, another box arrived, significantly smaller than the first. This time she was thoroughly confused. It was from Red, there was no doubt of that. But what else could he possibly need to give her? It turned out to be a jar, one with tiny gold stars embedded in the glass. They twinkled when she held it up to the light, and for a second, all she could think about was that night in the woods, stars in the sky, little spots of light inside their tent. And him, Red. The jar contained a trio of the hair ties she liked, the soft fabric ones that didn't snag. She huffed out a laugh as she realised what he was trying to do. She never knew where her hair ties were, unless they were on her head, so he wanted her to keep them in a jar. But, she reminded herself, pushing the smile off her face, jars weren't any use to her. Between her fibromyalgia and the amount she used her hands for work, the strength in her wrists and fingers was usually zero.
It was a rare and blessed day when Chloe Brand could open a jar. She was about to put it back in the box when she realised that it didn't actually have a lid, or rather not a lid that resembled anything she'd ever seen. There was an odd transparent-looking bubble thing around the opening, and she prodded it tentatively. It gave under her touch. She pushed just a little bit harder, and then her hand was in the jar. She stared in amazement, her eyes catching up with what her nerve endings were trying to tell her. There was a circular band of cushioning around the jar's rim that ballooned up to close it, but shrank back under pressure to let her hand in. Maybe chocolate and a letter she refused to read could be taken as a goodbye, but this, she didn't know how to take. This was something you gave someone to show them you cared, or that you loved. Maybe she should read the note. Maybe it wouldn't be a goodbye after all. Maybe it would be sheer magic on a sheet of paper and would say exactly the right thing, the thing she couldn't even define, the thing she didn't know existed, the thing that would erase all the hurt she'd felt and make her brave enough to do this again. And maybe she'd run a marathon tomorrow, but she wouldn't bet her life on that now, would she? So she steeled herself against her heart's fanciful interpretations, and she put the jar beside the chocolate, and she absolutely refused to open the book. Days passed, and more gifts came. Boxes of her favourite fruit and herbal teas. A little stuffed cat that looked so like Smudge, she might possibly have cried just the tiniest bit when she saw it. And maybe, perhaps sometimes, she slept with it beside her. But that didn't matter because there were no witnesses. Next was a guide to New York City, light enough for her to carry, that gave directions using major landmarks and street signs instead of maps. Then there was a tiny plastic pink chair, studded with little diamantes, that she realised on a bark of laughter was supposed to be Madame Chair. It was followed by a bag of marshmallows, accompanied by a handwritten recipe describing how to roast them with an oven. She could tell he'd tried to be neat with his rounded block capitals, but there was a smudge of sunset orange paint on the back of the thick, creamy paper that made her smile. He'd drawn goofy little cartoon pictures next to each instruction. She missed him. She missed him so much that she was starting to hate him. She found the gold notebook and held it in her hands and tried to make herself open it. She knew it wasn't a goodbye. It was almost certainly an apology, an explanation that he'd panicked. The problem was, Chloe had panicked that day too, and she hadn't stopped ever since. Dragging herself out of this confusing, teary fog of fear didn't feel impossible, but it did feel daunting, as if she might not manage it alone, as if she might get lost in the dark. She could only think of one person who could shine a light on her murky thoughts. She put the notebook down and grabbed her coat. Gigi's attic yoga studio was warm enough to make Chloe slightly drowsy, as was the low, gentle music and the smooth hum of the instructor's voice. Breathe in for me, and out. In, and out. Chloe found herself following those instructions as she waited awkwardly on a beanbag for the class of one to finish. She hadn't realised what a jittery mess she was until she'd gotten in the car to drive over here. She'd ended up calling a taxi instead. One more time, the soothing voice said. It came from Shivani, a depressingly happy, confident and glowing woman in her mid-50s who swanned about in sports bras and leggings and did inhuman things with her spine. Not ripping it out and beating aliens with it type inhuman things, though. More like particularly impressive bow poses. She stood at the front of the room opposite Gigi, who was also wearing a sports bra and leggings, and had, beneath her fine, crepey skin, better abs than any of her granddaughters. Sigh. The class wound down. Gigi and Shivani chuckled softly to each other, as if their mutual flexibility, fitness, and presumably inner peace were some sort of hilarious inside joke. Then they hugged for several long, sweaty moments, murmuring things in each other's ears. If Chloe allowed herself to think about it for more than 5 seconds at a time, she would have to accept that Gigi was 100% banging her yoga instructor and had been for about the last 7 years,
which was why Chloe did not allow herself to think about it for more than 5 seconds at a time.
I'll see you later, Chloe, love,
Shivani called out as she left. She wasn't leaving the house, of course. No, she was just going downstairs to give Chloe and Gigi some privacy, and also to start Gigi's wheatgrass chocolate and Bailey's smoothie, the perfect pre-dinner tipple, apparently.
So, darling,
Gigi purred, producing an electric blue silk wrap from thin air and slipping gracefully into it. She came over to the beanbags where Chloe had been waiting patiently for the past half hour, or, to be truthful, where she'd been waiting sullenly and with a slightly frantic air.
To what do I owe the honour of this visit?
I just thought I'd pop by.
Chloe attempted to say this airily, but the words hit the professionally distressed wood floor like 6 lumps of lead. Gigi arched a brow.
You, a woman who has not driven voluntarily since 2003,
slight exaggeration, Gigi,
were moved to get into your car, tootle out of your beloved filthy grey city.
I got a taxi for the safety of the public, actually.
And scurry through the house like a sneaky little mouse to avoid your parents and Eve.
I did not,
Chloe lied hotly, because you felt the urge to pop by.
Gigi pursed glossy lips. When had they become glossy? Had she just applied makeup by psychic command?
Darling, as the children say, don't bullshit me.
Ah,
Chloe muttered. My loving grandmother.
Your impatient grandmother, who wants her smoothie and her Shivani. I know how you get, Chloe, my love. Save us both the trouble and spit it out.
Perhaps those words were a spell rather than a suggestion, because they worked. Words tumbled from Chloe's lips before she could overthink them, convince herself to keep them inside, or even arrange them into something deceptively dry and apparently unimportant.
When you love someone, Gigi, someone who doesn't have to love you back, and they might hurt you, and you might hurt them, and anything could go wrong, and it already has, how do you know that it's,
real?
Gigi suggested. But disturbingly, Chloe had no questions on that count. It hadn't even occurred to her to ask. Her question was far more difficult.
How do you know that it's safe? How do you know that it's worth the risk? Please tell me it never is. Please tell me that I did the right thing. Please tell me I didn't abandon Red right back and that we're better off apart. No. Please don't.
Gigi regarded her for a long moment with those beautiful, maddening eyes, framed by smile lines that proved what Chloe already knew. Despite her habit of telling her grandchildren not to frown, laugh, or otherwise emote for fear of wrinkles, Gigi had never let anything stop her from living life to the fullest. Finally, the older woman said,
You've asked me 2 very different questions in one go, Chloe, and I hope you don't think they're at all the same. Love is certainly never safe, but it's absolutely worth it.
She produced an unlit cigarette and twirled it between long, elegant fingers. Since Gigi wasn't wearing a headscarf this afternoon, her chic crop of white coils on display, Chloe had absolutely no idea where the Marlborough had been hidden. Her knickers, up one nostril, in an alternate dimension she accessed at will. God only knew. After a moment, Gigi spoke again.
I fell in love at 16 with a scoundrel of a man who impregnated and abandoned me, which of course led to my parents kicking me out of the house because I'd set a poor example for my sisters. My caring for your, for your grandfather, I suppose, didn't do anything to fix the fact that he was a pathetic, nasty little man who wasn't worthy of the love I gave him. And his many flaws, unfortunately, didn't stop me from adoring him. After all, when it comes to love, it's not a person's flaws we're looking at now, is it?
She smiled wryly, but Chloe couldn't quite bring herself to smile back.
Love isn't safe, as that story proves. But is it worth it?
Gigi raised her arms in a typically grand gesture, and Chloe knew she wasn't indicating the mansion they currently sat in, so different from the tiny family home Gigi had been kicked out of, but the people who lived inside it.
I have your father. I have you girls. And of course, I have my top 10 hit,
Hey, Mr. Dick Jr., which if any lawyers or journalists happen to come sniffing around, has what, darling?
Absolutely nothing to do with one Richard F. Jameson, whom my poor dear grandmother has never even heard of,
Chloe recited obediently.
But Gigi, I... Well, you might as well know that I'm talking about Red.
Gasp, Gigi murmured. Chloe glowered.
I suppose I've fallen in love with him, she said, which was the least embarrassing way she could phrase. I love Redford Morgan like a man eating tiger love soft and fleshy upper arms. And I think he might...
She cleared her throat and straightened her spine, accepting what she should have known from the start, from the moment he'd called her name through the door.
He loves me too,
Chloe said, because she felt in her bones that it was true.
But we hurt each other. And now I feel trapped in this endless hesitation because, well, what if we keep doing it? What if we keep making messes? I've always felt like I'm the kind of person who...
She smiled even though it wasn't funny.
I'm the kind of person who hurts too much.
No, Gigi corrected calmly. You are a woman who, in a life filled with pain, came here to ask about love.
Those words hit Chloe like a perfect chiming chord, the kind that reverberated through her very soul. They were true in a way that spoke to her, true in a way that made her take another look at herself.
Yes, she murmured slowly. I suppose I am.
Who else was she? Red always called her tough. He called her a badass. She agreed because physically she was, but emotionally... She'd always been so afraid, and yet... She was the woman who'd come here to ask about love. She was the woman who'd decided to change her entire life with nothing but a list. She was the woman who survived every single day. She was Chloe fucking Brown. And she was starting to wonder if she'd been brave enough from the beginning. If she just needed to love herself enough to realize it. She supposed, as the knowledge dawned in her like a sunrise, that she must love herself right now. And it felt good. She went home and opened the notebook. It had been on her coffee table, shiny and golden, comforting and terrifying, for almost a week now. She grabbed her fake smudge for moral support, then briefly wondered if she should call Annie for real moral support, but no. Annie was horrible at answering her phone, and while she would call back eventually, Chloe needed to do this now. She needed him. And he, she rather thought, needed her. Time to find out. She opened the book. His handwriting was careful, not quite chaos. So very red that she ran fond fingers over the letters. Then she told herself sternly to stop mooning and read.
Dear Chloe, you might have heard that I'm quitting my job. That probably seems like I'm leaving you, but I'm not. I gave notice the day before our camping trip because being with you and being your superintendent seemed like a bad idea. This job was safe for me, but I want you more than I want that safety. And anyway, partly because of you, I don't think I need that safety anymore. You've done a lot for me, and the fact that all I've done in return is hurt you. Well, it makes me feel like shit on a basic level. But then I feel extra shit because, oh my God, Chloe, I love you so fucking bad. I've been wondering if I should say it like this after what happened, but this might be the only chance I get. And I need you to know because it's the truest thing about me. Chloe, Sophia, Brown, I am so in love with you. And I want to prove it because that's what you deserve. I want you to trust me again. I want to make you smile until you forget how it feels to cry. I want you to know I'm not going anywhere. And since you're the expert planner, I decided to take a leaf out of your book. I made a list. Get Chloe back. 1. Lure her with food and presents. 2. Wait outside Annie's house. Nick Smudge. 3. Learn how to use a PlayStation. Tick. 4. Paint in front of windows. shirtless, maybe naked. Might traumatise residents slash get arrested, but I think she'd like it. 5. Take charge of old Button so she can wear real cardigans if she wants to. 6. Use my bloody Instagram account. Tick. 7. Continue therapy. Tick. 8. Love her, always, no matter what. Tick. I already started on some. I'm hoping if I work through the list, eventually I'll get you back. If it's all wrong, or you want something else, or you have this burning desire to tell me what a dick I am, feel free. Call me. Come over. Open your curtains and give me the bird, please. I miss you. We can do this. If you don't trust me on that, trust yourself. Because you must know you can do anything you set your mind to. Yours, Red. Chloe read the letter 3 times. Only when one of her tears plopped onto the page, drowning the D at the end of his name, did she rip herself away from the words. She looked up at her curtains, drawn tight as a shield, and her eyes narrowed. Bright, glittering power surged through her, and for the first time in a while she felt alive, impatient, determined, demanding. She stalked over, ripped them open, and winter darkness appeared before her. Winter darkness and a stubborn square of light. A familiar figure stood behind the window across the courtyard, his sunset hair hanging over his face, his chest bare to reveal corded muscle, bold ink, vulnerable skin, and vitality. He was bent over a canvas as always, but a second after she opened the curtains, he stilled. Then slowly, slowly, turned. She didn't hide. The distance between them made it difficult to see that feline springtime gaze, but she felt the moment their eyes met. An electrifying shiver rushed through her body. He faced the window fully, put his hand against the glass, and she had the oddest feeling that this was one of those moments in life that could amount to everything or nothing, could be a transformation or a regret. This was the sort of moment that reckless, exciting women experienced. No. No. This was the sort of moment she experienced. Lists, worries, razor-sharp shyness and all. Bravery wasn't an identity so much as a choice. She chose him. Chapter 23. Red used to think that fucking up was his speciality, but after fucking up with Chloe, he hadn't let himself think that anymore, because if it was true, he'd lost her forever. And if he'd lost her forever, no, not an option. So Red had decided that his new speciality was fixing things. After all, he'd known from the moment love hit him like a truck that he couldn't shove it at her and hope for the best. He'd known she'd need more, that he'd have to make her understand everything in his heart, that he'd have to give her a reason to trust him. And so he formulated his plan, and he wrote his list. Then, since he'd handed in his notice to Vic and time was flying, he'd pulled himself together and gotten down to business. Not just with Chloe, with everything. Every morning he woke up, checked his window, and found her curtains shut tight. He let himself sit with sick, acidic fear for a few moments, breathing deep, wanting her, missing her, and then he got his shit together. He planned for next month, when he'd be leaving this building behind and plunging headfirst into the unknown again. He studied his savings in spreadsheets that would give Chloe a hard-on, checking and double-checking that he could afford the risk. He researched his business, reached out to old friends, and figured out his new website by reading Chloe's instructions, even if hearing her voice through the words twisted his heart. He was going to be okay. He knew that, but he'd be so much better with Chloe. Only the days passed, and her curtains remained closed, and each morning he lost a little bit of hope, or maybe a lot of hope. So much that when she did open the curtains, when he caught that flutter of movement and spill of light from the corner of his eye,
He thought for a moment he was imagining things. But then he turned, and he saw her, and he knew that not even his desperate memories could recreate that heavy midnight gaze. Red stared, and stared, and stared. Drank her in. Started to worry about his Grand Prix-worthy pulse and his painfully pounding heart. He might be dying of fucking euphoria at the sight of her. That might just be okay. Then she was gone in a flash of turquoise glasses and a swirl of her pink and white skirt. He felt like he'd been knocked over the head, stood there, transfixed, with his paintbrush in his hand, blue acrylic threatening to drip onto the floor, and thought, Chloe, 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 like a broken record, until a knock came at the door. He'd heard that knock once in his entire life, but he knew exactly who it belonged to. He dropped the paintbrush, ran through the flat, yanked the door open. And there she was, Chloe Brown. Beautiful with her hard stare and her hair contained by the polka dot hair tie he'd bought her. And yes, he was looking that hard. And no, he would not stop. She sailed past him into the flat, and he forced his hands behind his back because dragging her into his arms and kissing the living daylights out of her would be bad. It would be very bloody bad. Here, she said, holding something out to him. Her voice was husky fucking music. He wanted to eat it. He could put his mouth over hers and... Wait, no, that was just kissing. No kissing. Not when she might be here to give him a chance. He took the thing she held. A notebook. His palms sweating and hope swelling. Chloe. Red, she said softly. Read that for me. Heart in his mouth, he obeyed. He already knew what he'd find. Chloe's list. The real one, full and uncensored. He took a breath and finally read the goals that had started all this. The list was so neat and orderly and utterly her. Every goal was printed carefully in black ink, painstakingly perfect. Some of the entries he recognised, others he didn't. Some were ticked off, some crossed out and replaced, all with so much care. His heart twisted. Why had he ever assumed that a spot on this list meant the worst? He should have known, he had known, that this was her path to the person she wanted to be. Except, he'd never really accepted that fact, because to him she was already perfect. He had the strongest fucking urge to throw this book across the room before he could find his own entry, except that would be a mistake, and he'd made enough of those already. He forced himself to look for his own name. Found it. Keep Red. He put the book down and looked at her. He wanted to say something. The right thing. He'd never managed it before, so he doubted he would now, but he tried. I was wrong. I know I was wrong. I read your letter, she interrupted. She'd only just read it. Was that good or bad? She seemed edgy, nervous, her soft lips pressed tight, those hypnotic eyes avoiding his. Suddenly the room seemed darker, and the moment took on all the dread and finality of a grave. She didn't want him. He'd failed. He'd lost her, really lost her. But then she said, in a tone he couldn't decipher, I liked my presence. He laughed brokenly and ran a hand through his hair, tried to make his fear a joke, because she wouldn't appreciate him scattering the pieces of his broken heart over her like confetti. Chloe, baby, just put me out of my misery. She looked at him, finally, and he sucked in a breath. Couldn't help it. God, she was so beautiful. God, she made his head spin. She frowned slightly, shook her head, rolled her eyes. Then she said, All right. And kissed him. He stumbled back into the wall and she followed. Her hand slid into his hair and her body pressed tight against his. But her lips were petal soft, searching, tentative, as if she wasn't sure how he'd react. As it happened, he reacted like a starving animal. He couldn't silence the groan her touch teased from him, couldn't stop himself from shaking, not when his blood surged with the knowledge that this was actually happening. His lips parted hers hungrily, and when she glided her tongue over his, he gave a wounded, desperate growl that must have told her everything she could think to ask. I need you. I'm desperate for you. I'm something without you, and I'll survive without you, but I don't fucking want to, so Jesus, please don't make me. He dropped the notebook. His hands went to her waist, then her hips, then the row of buttons sewn down the front of her jumper. Her hair next, smoothed out ripples under his fingers, then the gentle curve of her throat and then her face. Everywhere he was, everywhere wasn't enough. She pulled back and panted, I'm sorry. Carefully he took off her glasses. Now she was young and vulnerable, giving him that soft focus. For what, love? For letting you go and for how long it took me to come here. I should have been braver like you.
No,
he said firmly, fiercely. You're exactly as brave as you need to be. You're the one who makes me better. You're the bravest person I know. She grabbed the front of his T-shirt, dragged him close, kissed him again. It was slower this time, not as urgent. Talking touches, the sweet pressure of her mouth on his. I want you. The way she smoothed her hands over his chest. I missed you. And when he laced their fingers together, puzzle pieces slotted into place. I'm yours. His world was marshmallow pink, electric white, chocolate and earth and tropical ocean. His world was good. She pulled back again and everything seemed slightly paler. We should talk properly? Oh, yeah. Like rational adult human beings. Or we could kiss until we run out of oxygen. She smiled, and his heart broke and fixed itself. I mean it, he said. If I die, I die. She laughed and the air tasted different, clean. Come on, she said, marching toward his studio. But she didn't let go of his hand. Not until she sat down, leaning against a rare part of the wall that didn't have supplies stacked against it. Red sat opposite her and tried not to melt over the prim way she crossed her legs and arranged her skirt over her knees. But then his smile faded. Chloe, I'm sorry. I freaked out. I took my own shit out on you and I shouldn't have. But you read the list and you know I'm working on it and I hope that's enough. Softly she told him. It is. Red? Oh, wait, I forgot something. He found her hand again. Held on tight. I love you. The corners of those lush lips tilted ever so slightly before she got them under control. He wondered how he'd ever thought of her as reserved or, you know, up her own arse, when he could see every single emotion she tried to hide under that mask if he just looked hard enough. And right now he realized with a grin, happiness was shining right through her severe facade. She might as well have shoved the sun under a pillow. He could see every last golden ray burning through. But what she said was, "We'll address that in a minute." Red told himself this was too serious a moment to risk laughing. "Right now," she said, "I need to apologize to you too. I'm so fucking sorry, Red. I know that everything about that situation triggered you. I knew it at the time, but I didn't know the right way to react, and I should have." "No, Chloe," he said softly. "That's not on you." "No, it's not," she agreed. "But remember what you told me once about filling in people's gaps? You do things for me when I can't do them for myself. I want to support you in the same way. Can we work on that? Together?" She was so fucking lovely. So lovely. And she wanted him. He closed his eyes and nodded slowly. His voice came out like gravel. "Yeah, love. We can do that." "Good. Because you mean the world to me, and I don't ever want you to struggle alone." Her words were a balm to everything in him that ached or stung or bled. Their fingers laced together so tightly, he hoped they'd never come undone. "You," he told her quietly. "Or everything." Dry as a bone, she muttered.
Flatterer.
He smiled and felt it down to his soul.
That day,
she said softly, and his smile faded.
That day, neither of us gave the other a chance. You reacted badly to an admittedly confusing situation, and then I reacted badly to you reacting badly. I wish I'd been more understanding, but I was trying to protect myself, trying to avoid taking a risk, because the truth is, you scare me. You're monumental. Avoiding everything between us seemed easier than facing pain. But I refuse to be afraid any more, Red. You're more important than that.
Hope and relief and this impossible incandescent happiness swirled in his chest, as if his emotions were mixing to create the perfect colour for this moment. Something beautiful and brilliant and Chloe, like those cute blue glasses or warm brown eyes.
Maybe we should solemnly swear that in the future we'll both keep our heads out of our asses.
Maybe we should,
she said with a slow smile.
All right. I swear.
I swear.
She held out her little finger and he grinned.
What am I supposed to do with that?
Give me yours,
she said sternly. He did, and she hooked hers around his and said,
Now it's official. We pinky swore.
He snorted, pulled her closer because he couldn't resist. Her breath hitched as she leaned forward, her cheek brushing his. Just that slight contact sent a shower of almost unbearable pleasure through him. He whispered in her ear,
We okay?
We are,
she said softly. Something jagged and broken inside him smoothed out, slotting back into place so firmly that he felt like he should have heard the click. This was where and who and how he should be. With Chloe. He stood, pulling her up with him. And then, because he was in that kind of mood, he picked her up. She gave a little squeak of surprise as he cradled her against his chest, squeezing her to him, breathing in flowers and vanilla. Everything wrong with his world righted itself.
Just so you know, you aren't ever getting rid of me. You're it, and I'm fucked. I'm completely fucked.
She laughed, running a hand through his hair. The action was unthinkingly possessive. He closed his eyes for a moment on a wave of satisfaction.
That's good to know, she said. Where are we going, by the way?
My room. Since we're officially okay, there's no reason why you can't sit somewhere comfortable instead of the floor.
Fair enough. We'll just sit, though. That's all.
Oh, yeah. That's all.
It was, too, at first. She asked him 1,000 questions about his plans and nodded approvingly at his answers. He showed her the social media accounts he'd set up, and she told him why all his captions sucked and how to find decent hashtags. And that was absolutely all. But then Chloe got tired, so they lay down, and then she kissed him, and his brain malfunctioned, and the next thing he knew he was on top of her, holding her hands and licking into her mouth while she moaned. And then, in the middle of it all, she gasped,
Oh, I almost forgot. Our shelved topic?
What?
He growled, dragging his lips down her throat.
The fact that you love me.
He stilled.
It's very sweet, of course,
she said, in a voice so innocent,
he just knew. Chloe.
And highly flattering, particularly coming from someone as wonderful as you.
Chloe.
What? It's rude to interrupt, you know.
He grinned down at her.
Stop torturing me. Just say it.
Say what?
Woman.
I love you, Red. I love you. I love you. I...
She broke off with a squeak when he kissed her hard. Those three little words sounded so fucking good, but they tasted even better on her lips. Epilogue. 1 year later.
Chloe, you awful cow. It's about time you... Oh, hello there, Rhett.
Eve, as always, was on her best behaviour the moment she saw Red's face on her phone screen. Chloe didn't bother to hide her eye roll.
Yes, hello, dearest sister. I thought I'd check in before we got on with our day.
That's not true, Red said helpfully, raising his voice over the sounds of traffic and the clatter of hundreds of footsteps that were part and parcel of a busy New York street. I made her do it.
Chloe trod on his foot. He gave her an unapologetic grin.
Honestly, Red, thank God you're with her, Eve tutted. I bet you've already called your mum today like a good child.
She glared pointedly at Chloe, then turned away from the camera and hollered,
Everyone! Chloe's on the phone!
And wouldn't you know it, the entire family happened to be at home. Just Chloe's luck. Danny appeared first. Shouldn't she be in a library somewhere, starving in the name of academia? Followed by Dad, who was still wearing his coat, as always, like he might fly off somewhere any minute. Then came Mum. Oh, no, that was Aunt Mary without makeup. Mum was next, her smile uncharacteristically broad. She liked Red, thought he was a lovely boy, which was code for strong enough to protect my darling daughter if she insists on gallivanting about the world. Chloe did indeed insist. And then, finally, Gigi appeared, shoving everyone else out of the way until her face took up almost the entire screen. Gigi still hadn't quite grasped the finer points of a video call, so she liked to make absolutely certain that her brilliance could be seen. She beamed and held up a wriggling, protesting Smudge. Yes, they had Smudge. When Chloe and Red moved into a flat that allowed pets, Annie had provided a most welcome housewarming gift.
Darling, Gigi purred, are you having the absolute time of your life?
Perhaps, Chloe said with a private smile.
Down where her family couldn't see, Red's gloved hand squeezed hers.
Smudge misses you awfully, don't you, Smudge?
Smudge looked at best apathetic.
I miss him too, Chloe said.
New York in winter was absolutely freezing. For that reason, despite missing her family a little bit, Chloe hurried through the call. She'd text them all later, she assured them, and yes, she was feeling fine, and New York was indeed exciting, but no, she wouldn't compare it to Kenya or Belgium or Cuba, because they were all just so different and all equally amazing. Which was a lie, of course. Cuba had been her favourite, but she and Red weren't done jet-setting. Then finally, the last of her relatives said goodbye, and she put the phone down and turned to Red.
Sorry, I should have known that would take forever.
It's fine, Chloe.
It's not. I was practically teasing you.
She glanced at the glass entrance behind them to the Museum of Modern Art, then back at Red. He was almost bursting with excitement. The cold had turned the tip of his nose and his high cheekbones pale pink. His green eyes were bright, like a spark of midsummer in the middle of winter. He was so, so divine. She didn't know how he could be real.
I know you're dying to go in. Shall we?
Oh, yeah. But first...
He brought his hand to her cheek, and she didn't even mind that his glove was cold and a little wet from the softly falling snow.
Let me see if I can find anything to kiss under all these layers.
Maybe she'd gone slightly overboard with the scarves, too, and the hats, again, too, but it was cold.
You want to kiss me now?
She squawked, as he nudged aside the wool protecting her skin from the harsh wind.
At this very minute?
I want to kiss you every minute of the day,
he murmured, his eyes suddenly serious.
And I want to kiss you in every city on earth.
Then, as her heart overflowed with sickening amounts of love, his lips brushed hers, quick, light, and still so wonderful that her knees felt the tiniest bit weak. He pulled back and took his time nudging her scarves in place, even though they wouldn't be out here for much longer. Biting back a smile, she said,
Now shall we go in?
Are you feeling okay? You're not tired from the walk, are you?
Not yet.
Well, only a little bit.
He was practically vibrating with his eagerness to go inside, but still, he held off to check on her.
Buprenorphine still going strong?
I am high as a kite, my love.
She tried not to use her opioid patches all the time, but a trip to New York definitely required them. Good, he said, clearly pleased to know his girlfriend was appropriately drugged. And then, after a long exhale, he grinned. In we go, then.
Full speed ahead.
Try not to wet yourself with excitement, you big nerd. He shot her a quelling look as they stepped into the museum. Chloe, please. This is a classy establishment.
Sorry, I can't be tamed.
With a wry smile, he said seriously, I know. This is Atua Ando. This unabridged production of Get a Life, Chloe Brown, a novel by Talia Hibbert, presented by William Morrow and Harper Audio, was recorded at ID Audio in London. This programme was produced by John Marshall Media. Executive producer, Jennifer Lopes. Text copyright 2019 by Talia Hibbert. Production copyright 2019 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.